And welcome to the Everyday Board Game Podcast with your hosts, Daniel.
And Daniel.
There you go. Is that more professional? You like that?
Yeah, a lot better, honestly. The face, you know, is going to still scare people, but...
I will cover that. Yeah. I don't know. It always will. That's unless we just have like a black sheath over everything, you know? It just like covers up this half of the screen. You know, then that's one thing. But a big sensor bar just right across the face. Then we'd be questioned by people who are, why is there a sensor bar on this?
Like, yeah, it just takes up too much work for me to put it on. So that ain't going to happen.
Yeah, exactly. See, if you're not willing to take the time, you have no right to critique. All right.
Well, I could critique. I'm just not going to do the work for it.
You can't even say critique. You have no right to critique if you can't even say the word.
I got like 40 other things I got to do for this podcast rather than putting up a face bar.
Oh, those dreaded face bars.
You know what I'll do? I'll put like one of those little smiley face emojis over your face.
Oh, no, that's an idea. That's good.
I just need better editing software to actually do that.
You should have it match my expression, like somehow, like the cat on like the lawyer video that everybody's seen by now. You know, it's like, oh. I'm not an emoji. We could continue talking about board games.
All right, we're getting a little off kilter here. So.
We've never been on kilter at this point. We started the episode completely random. We're gonna own it at this point. I'm gonna propel it. I mean, those meme videos are important to life. You know, they are.
They got us through the last year, especially the cat one you were talking about, because that one just makes me giggle.
I can
honestly tell you, I'm not a cat. That's exactly what a cat would say.
It was the most innocent statement. You know, it was just, I'm here, Judge. I'm not a cat. So I can see that. It still makes me laugh. It's one of those things where it's like, you remember back in the day when keyboard cat was a thing? And it's like, oh, it's just a guy like tormenting his cat. No, this was the first like, genuine cat video that I enjoyed because I knew behind that cat face it was a lawyer.
Not just any lawyer, an old lawyer.
Yeah, and he was just trying to go along his business and try and conduct meaningful casing. I don't know what that lawyering, I guess, doing a court case, and he just couldn't keep serious because it was a cat face over him.
Yeah, it's been an interesting year, let me tell you.
Yeah. Well, now that we've completely lost it, we wanted to go with something, a pretty great topic this week. And at first, this is one of the first eight, technically the second eight, that the video will come up later in this month, early next month, I think. But this is the first top eight debate where all eight of them listed are games that we've played. We didn't have to skip any.
Yeah, these are both, we both have played these. We actually both played these probably multiple times, except for one. I've only played Catan once. No, not including the reskins, but yeah.
Right. But you played enough where you...
Yeah. It's simple enough to remember. To the point, I made a script for it, so...
Yeah. Yeah, so it shouldn't be a problem. But before keeping our audience in the dark, let's tell them what we actually came up with.
What you came up with, because this is pretty much your list.
It was. I own it. I went to Board Game Geek, and I was curious because we had just talked about some pretty popular games. And by popular, I mean a lot of people have played it and owned it, like maybe in their childhood and whatnot. But I wanted to see if there was the most owned games, and I couldn't find a way to do that. So I settled for the next best option. Which games had the most votes on Board Game Geek? Not positive, not...
Just most
negative views, just votes. So that doesn't mean that these are the best, highest rated games. No. Just the most votes, which I think is the closest to the most owned that we can legitimately equate to, you know.
So I think this is our oldest list on a top eight debate since the Rio Grande games, the top eight debate.
Yeah, this definitely has some of the oldest games. Yeah. And even our newest game on here is still a few years old.
Yeah.
So, do we want to bring up what the list is?
Sure, we could do that. Our number one seed is Pandemic, and specifically Vanilla. So not Legacy, none of that, just regular old Pandemic.
Yes. Our number two seed is Carcass. Pandemic will be going up against our number eight seed. I should do this how we normally do it. Terraforming Mars, which is our newest game on the list.
Yeah, it is literally the newest game, and I'm surprised it had that many votes.
Yeah, me too.
Our number two seed that you were mentioning earlier, Carcassonne, going up against.
Our number seven seed, Codenames, which is also not exactly a new
game. Yeah, it's relatively newer.
15, 16, something like that.
I have to say, Terraforming Mars and Codenames is the only one on our list that's been within the last 10 years.
Yeah, pretty much.
Because our number three seed is formerly known as Settlers of Catan. Now it's just Catan.
Now it's known as the board game formerly known as the Settlers of Catan. and it's just like some weird like hexagon symbol. It's really strange. Like there's a piece of wood on it and a sheep. I don't know. It's weird. Versus our number six seed, Ticket to Ride.
Vanilla. This is the American version, not Europe or any of those other ones. It. Number four seed, Seven Wonders. Not Duel. Seven Wonders.
We have to keep clarifying this. Versus our number five seed, Dominion. That's it. Yeah. Also not Intrigue or Expansion or anything like that. Dominion. Base game.
Base game Dominion. Yeah, so this is literally your list. I like most of these games fine. You know which one's my favorite, but I don't even think it's coming out of the first round.
Right. It might not. We'll see. I mean, here's the thing, too. Also, this game is, or these games, there's a reason they're that well-known. I believe every single one of these, with the exception of Terraforming Mars and Codenames, were on tabletop. I might be wrong, but I do believe all of them were. No, Dominion probably wasn't.
I don't think Dominion was. That's why I was looking at the list. I'm like, I don't think Dominion was.
Yeah, I don't think Dominion was either. It got a lot of press for being like the main deck builder. And for a few years, it really was the deck builder.
Yeah, no, I don't get me wrong. I don't hate this list. I'm just like, wow, we found a way to get some old games on this list. Because the thing about Board Game Geek, it is really the cult of the new. I mean, you have Gloomhaven Jaws the Lion. This last I checked was sitting six on BGG overall. Six.
Yeah.
So, yep. I don't know what to tell you there. But yeah, no, I like this list. There, you could probably tell which game I'm okay with. I don't really care for on this list.
Yeah, no, there's a few that I'm not the biggest fan of, but I do like the majority of them. So
yeah, so this is going to be an interesting
I like all of them. Mm-hmm. There's one that I don't care for that much, but I appreciate every single game that's on this list. Absolutely.
I'm trying to see which. We're in the same boat on that one.
Yes.
But we'll get to that when we get to it. Let's talk about what we asked this question to our audience on Board Game Revolution. They only gave us one honorable mention. You want to tell what the people that honorable mention is?
Yeah. Joe put none of the above. No, come on, Joe. Come on. What is this? And it got eight votes.
It tied with our last place game.
I can't help but think that the people who voted for none of the above are like either cult of the new or just kind of like I play war games, ha ha ha.
Yeah, that's yeah, right. That kind of stuff.
Like very alpha gamer, like not to judge them or anything, but it's just like, how could you not like at least one of these?
One of these. Fine. Like what you like. Yeah. Don't be a jerk.
If you're going to have fun playing Monopoly, go do it. That's your choice. Clearly, because, or LCR, you know, if you like LCR, it's your goal. And and go along with those eight votes, really like LCR and Monopoly. No, I'm kidding. I don't know that.
Though I do have to say, other than that one honorable mention, there's actually some good discussion in the comments that we'll get to here in a minute. But yeah, no, other than that one, none of the above. I like the comments and the reasoning behind it.
I think that's funny, honestly. I really do. I just had to jab a little bit.
I find it hilarious in all honesty. Yeah. Especially since it tied our last place game.
Yes. It tied our last place out of all those. And I get it. You know, like, obviously, like, a lot of these are very not heavy games. You know, with the exception of Terraforming Mars, which is somehow on the list. It's, like, they're mostly family weight gateway games, and that's why they're owned by so many people and why they've been
played
by
so many people. I'm just trying to see here. So 1, 2, 3, 4 Yeah, these are, other than, I would say, Dominion is probably next step, and Terraforming Mars is next step, but the rest of these are family weight.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much, yeah.
So you want to start us off with the comments?
Sure. Cynthia says, Carcassonne got us into the hobby many years ago. Same with myself. Representing.
Angel here, he's actually a mutual friend of ours and a fan of the podcast, said code names because it's fun and simple to teach.
And Florence says, full stress and suspense for 4 hours. So satisfying. Hashtag terraforming Mars.
Aram says, Carcassonne, it is the game that got us into the hobby. When we played it with a friend, then we had to buy it. Now we own mini games, but it's still the favorite. Easy to teach and play, no player elimination, fun, mini expansions, adds a good twist. The gameplay length is just right.
With some exceptions.
Yes.
I own every expansion, every real full expansion, not every promo yet, but Carcassonne has some weird expansions.
Oh, yeah.
Jolie says, Pandemic or Codenames are as a close second.
Tom says, for a long time it was Dominion, but I got a little burnt out and from playing it online a little too much. Now it's Terraforming Mars because I like the added depth and complexity.
He brings up a really interesting point. I wonder how many people went from Dominion to something like Terraforming Mars, like a more
complex. Yeah, just the complexity level. I mean, I remember when I started, I was playing really simple games like the Ticket to Ride that we were talking about. And now I play Feld games. I collect Feld games. Or yep. As you can see behind me, I have all the Terraforming Mars expansions. So,
yeah, I bet they're really fun too. You know,
I've played one of them. No, I played two of them. We'll get to that in a little bit later.
Shame. Anyway, I have so many Funkoverse figures in here that I haven't played yet. Anyway. Anna says, I voted Terraforming Mars is my favorite, but I also really enjoy Seven Wonders, Catan, Codenames, and Dominion as quicker games that more people are willing to play with me.
Yeah, that's the thing about Terraforming Mars, and we'll get to the discussion. It's a time sink, and some people are afraid of something like that.
Yep.
Jonathan says, Pandemic got him into the hobby. It has a special place in his heart, but he doesn't really play it anymore. Terraforming Mars always gives him a unique experience each time he plays it.
Pierre says, such surveys always give first place to Terraforming Mars. I don't know if he said that he's voting for Terraforming Mars or what, but he's not wrong. He kind of did.
Yeah, let's not lie. There is a significant gap here.
Yeah.
Angela says, Seven Wonders, just out of preference. To be fair, I haven't played all on the list, and that's fine. Play what you like.
Alexandre says, Dominion is the only one I haven't played. The others are all fun. It is almost a tie between Pandemic for its cooperative gameplay and Terraforming Mars for all of the possibilities with the cards and corporations. In the end, Terraforming Mars wins.
Robert says, Pandemic. Easy setup, easy to learn, and difficult to master. This was a big gateway for me into more complex board games. And that's going to be something we hit on a lot. A lot of these games are the gateway for a lot of people.
Absolutely. And Rob said, Ticket to Ride is so easy to set up, to play, stress-free, amazing game.
Can't argue that point.
Yeah. Are there any comments of those that you agree or disagree with?
Honestly, I don't really disagree with any of them. These are people's personal choices, which is fine. I agree to an extent with Carcassonne that it's easy to teach and learn. There are some stuff that make it a little bit more difficult for people to understand. We'll get to that when we get to the debate itself.
Yeah. Cool. Awesome. So let's talk about our honorable mentions real quick. You and I always pick three honorable mentions. This was a weird one to pick honorable mentions for because I struggled to decide whether I just wanted to talk about games I really wanted to or ones that I was either surprised with being on the list or ones I felt was a good representation of the list.
I just went with games I liked.
Three games you liked. Got it.
Yeah.
Well, that's
I didn't think that hard on it. I was just like, that one, and that one, I'm good.
Well, I always like to try and vary it up, but I couldn't justify why. Hopefully each of these three I'll be able to explain. But for now, let's flip the coin of doom to decide who talks about their honorable mentions first. Daniel, I'll be beginning. My number three honorable mention, which is in...
Is that a trick coin? Because, man, I keep failing.
We'll see throughout the competition, because it's been the same thing every time. My number three honorable mention on here is one that I always see at, like, thrift stores. I've had multiple copies of different versions. I probably own about 7 or 8 different copies of this game. And that's just because it worked well to expand and make multiple versions of, multiple themings, slightly different mechanisms. But what it did is it took 16 cards and made it an absolutely brilliant game. I think it's 16 cards. That's Love Letter.
Yeah.
The beginning of the micro game. And I can see why so many people have played it, because it's so easy to teach to people. Do you have a love letter by you, or?
Yeah, the Batman love letter is right there.
Oh, okay. It's hard to see, but yeah, that is a bat letter, isn't it? I just saw you pointing randomly around your head.
right there.
I don't have it on display, unfortunately. I have bigger games here, but no, love letter, it has to be said, because it's such a great game, but it makes sense why so many people won't play it. And how many people have gotten the chance to play it. So I had to put on my number three honorable mention.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with you. I didn't put that on my list because I like Love Letter. But again, I put games that I actually like. And I'm surprised that these games have that many votes. Especially, we'll get to the number two one here. But number three, first off, is a Stonemaier game. And that one is Scythe. It is one of my favorite Stonemaier games. It's been out, I want to say 2015, 2016, so it's been out for a bit. I just really enjoy this game. I'm surprised it had that many likes, not as surprising as the next one on my list here, but I like the action selection. So if you're familiar with Villainous, you go to a different section on your player board, you take the top part, you could possibly take the bottom part if you can afford it. There's a lot of choices that you got to make in this game. I think it's the first 2-8 stars. I can't remember. It's been a bit since I played it. But it's a phenomenal game. It's Stonemaier. It's a very well-produced game. And in all honesty, I believe Scythe is, as much as I like Viticulture and some of their earlier games I own, I really think Scythe is what put Stonemaier on the map for a lot of people.
Yeah, it most definitely did. Good pick. My number two is one of my favorite card games of all time, hands down. It's a brilliant card game, and it was out since the late 90s, and I'm surprised it was honestly on this list of how many people have played it and potentially own it. That's Bonanza. Mm. Any excuse for me to talk about Bonanza, I'm going to take it. I'm just surprised.
Beans!
Bean farming, yeah. I just don't realize how many people have voted for it, that have played it, and have felt the time to take time out of their day to say, oh, I need to say something about this game by making my vote online. I never would have thought that of Bonanza. I really did, because from every gamer that I've played with, I'm the one who's introduced that to them. Because
it's not just that. Out of all the Rosenberg games, this is the one that's really up there on his list. It's interesting. Now, well, I know there's others up there.
Agricola was number 9, and Puerto Rico is a few spots below that. So it's not one of the highest
Uwe Rosenberg. But still, Let's just tell the audience, you didn't go past the first page. It's still on the first page of this vote.
Yes. Yeah. It's in the first page of the most voted for games of all time. So Bonanza is amazing. That's my number two.
And it's a small, simple card game. That's a great pick. Speaking of cards, my number two pick, and it was funny because when I was writing this out, I had my honorable mentions. I'm like, oh, I forgot this was my honorable mentions last week. But I'm like, I'm too lazy to change it. It's going to stay on my list. And that is Wingspan, another Stonemaier game. Mm-hmm. This is the one, I love the game. I've talked about it before. But what's surprising to me, this game came out 2019 and is on the most voted list in the first page. That is ridiculous. This game's 2 years old. And it's such a phenomenal game. I have a great time playing it. And again, I'll reiterate what I said last week during our special edition, anniversary edition stuff, we were talking about it. This is a game that drew people from outside the hobby into the hobby. And not a lot of games do that. Catan on our list here is one of them. Ticket to Ride is another one that pulls people in. Wingspan is that for this generation. It's pulling people in who've never played a modern board game and started playing this. So I have to give its kudos. It really is. It's one of the most beautiful games produced. It's well supported. And I'm glad I own it. And I'm glad it has as many votes as it did.
Very good. Yeah. I when you said Scythe earlier, I was surprised. Because I knew Wingspan should have been on the list. I'm just surprised that it wasn't already. So I was like, if you're sticking with just Scythe, hold on. Something's weird here. Yeah.
But to me, out of the most surprised, Wingspan is my most surprised one because, again, it came out 2 years ago and it's on the first page of most voted in, really well up there.
Yeah.
I think it was like 10 or 11.
It was 3 years ago, no?
Was 2019 it really? Is when it came out.
Wow. That's only 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Wow. Last year.
I know this because I played it at Dice Tower West. That was the year I went to Dice Tower West. And that's when I realized, well, I have to buy this game and you couldn't find it anywhere. I had to buy it in the summer before you can actually get a reprint of it.
Wow. That's impressive. All right. Well, cool. So my number one is, it's not a cheat. It makes sense why it's on this list. But let me explain why I picked it as an honorable mention. Pandemic Legacy Season 1. The legacy game that got 42,000 votes. 42,000 people ranked it on BoardGameGeek. And obviously all of them were positive because it was number one at one point.
And I think it's still number two, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. But think about that. That means 42,000 people at least played a legacy game. Yeah. Like, that's incredible to me. I mean, I know, like, Even if you break it down and say, okay, an average of four people per game, which is the cap anyway, that's still 10,000 plays of that for just the first month alone. They probably played somewhere to 18 times that. That's 180,000 plays that this game created. Just think about that for a minute. That is incredible.
I don't want it. My brain hurts.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, what game gets played 180,000 times? Monopoly is one of them.
Maybe if you suck at Gloomhaven, I don't know.
Yeah, maybe if you're really bad at Gloomhaven. No, I mean, like, I don't think there's that many lasting powers. And I mainly brought it on here, not just because of how incredible that number is, but because the original version Pandemic is also our number one highest, most voted for game of all time.
Yeah, no, it's impressive. But then again, I think Pandemic was at number one at one point on BGG, so...
Probably.
It's not really that surprising.
Yeah, and between those two, I mean, just Pandemic Legacy Season 1 and Vanilla Pandemic have over 150,000 votes on BoardGameGeek.
That's crazy.
That's
mind you, regular Pandemic has been out since, what, 2004,
I think.
Four, something like the first edition, because I think the better edition was 2008.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And it's just, how does one game get that many play, and there's no way that all of them only played it once. Yeah. I know I haven't, and I know I'm not the only one. So I mean, that is the next Monopoly at this point. I mean, that it has all these different versions where a spin-off of the base game, Pandemic Legacy, in a completely different iteration, has more plays than many other games that are
games. Yeah, no, that's impressive.
Yeah. It's incredible to me. So that's why I had to pick it as my number one honorable mention.
So my number honorable mention is along that same line, that I'm surprised how high this is, especially compared to its predecessor, and that is Seven Wonders Duel. This is actually quite up there for a two-player version of a multiplayer game. And in all honesty, in my opinion, the better of the two games. I like the fact that it has a lot of good choices. A great implementation of the drafting mechanism from Seven Wonders. I do want to try the expansions, but the fact that a two-player game had this many votes, and I didn't look up the list, but I know it was like 14 or something like that. It was really, really high, and there was a lot of votes on it. It's crazy to me that a two-player game was this high, and especially since it's re-implementing a game that's on our list for the two-player form. That's amazing. Along the same lines of your Pandemic, I was shocked. That's why it had to be my number one. That's why I put Wingspan behind it. Is that Seven Wonders Duel was that high for a two-player game?
Yeah. Yeah, that's one of the highest two players. Jaipur was also on the list, and I don't think it was higher than that, though. It was lower down. So, yeah, that might have been the highest two-player only game on the list.
I think it was. Yeah, that's why I put it on there.
Yeah, very cool. Awesome. Well, so let's talk about the top eight debate and how we break it down and how we came up with it.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll get into the debate itself. So, as always with our top eight debates, we pick the eight highest-ranked games on BoardGameGeek.com based on a category, mechanism, designer, or whatever way that we rank it. And then we pick the top eight games that Daniel and I have both played. Why do we do that? This is an easy one, obviously, because we've played all the top eight. But we do that because we need to give a legitimate argument to back up our debate for this. This isn't just a debate. We're going to take our bias out of it, and we're going to explain by different criteria why one game is better than a different game.
And before we get into the criteria, let me clarify some new rules that we're implementing this time in our second year. For one thing, Gloomhaven, since it was our champion, if you haven't read that or seen that episode, you need to go back and pay attention. Gloomhaven is now banned from top eight debates this year because it was our overall champion in our first year. And two, we're allowing veto powers now. So if there's a game that we just don't want to argue, well, it's been argued enough, you and me both have the ability to say, you know what, I don't want to talk about this. Let's take it out. Yep. I think what we should do is that we get one game per list each that we can veto.
Okay, that sounds good to me. Cool. And if we even feel that we need to add the veto to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know which one I'm going to almost always pick. But I was almost thinking we should have one per year and we choose it, and that's a permanent veto, and we add on to it every year. We'll debate on that later.
Yeah.
Now, the criteria that we were talking about, what makes this very important, is that we have five very specific criteria that we feel make up the best of the best games. And we debate on these five criteria. The first one is ease of play. How easy is this game going to get to your table, and how easy is it to learn? What's likelihood of getting to the table, easy and familiarity with the rules, and the other subcategory is how AP. Likely is it going to cause analysis paralysis of the problem? So are you going to be sitting there watching one player going, "Ooh, ow, my head, ooh, I have a headache now." Like that doesn't
and making the game kind of slog by too.
Right, exactly. Now it's a smaller idea, but like if everything gives you all of the options all at once, well, I wouldn't say that's easier to play, even if it is simple. Like chess, I don't necessarily say is an easy game to play because every piece can move in every different way. You know, you have a lot of options straight off of the first opening move. So that's an example where checkers, that's an easy game to play because you only have a set number of rules or a set number of options to you each turn.
So the next on our criteria list is replay value. The length and time of the game, as well as how well it scales. Does the 1 to 4 player game play just as well and not too much time gets added on? The minimum number of plays to get the full experience. Do you just play it once and know how to play it? Or is there stuff that's ever changing or variable player abilities or setup and stuff like that that gives you a whole nother experience when you're playing it for the second time, as well as expandability? Does it already have existing expansions? We allow up to one possible expansion, i.e. we always use space base for this. There's a volume one. We're assuming there's going to be a volume two. We only allow one future expansion, or if expansions have been confirmed by the designer or publisher.
That's right. Our next criteria is art and production. And let's be honest, the better the art, the better the production, the easier it is to understand the cards, that really helps the game. Let's give an example. If money wasn't an issue and you had just a very generic dollar store piece of version of chess where on little like wooden tiles and they're like obviously drawn on, you know, and they're not very good quality, give you splinters as you're playing with it, versus like a beautiful like Lord of the Rings like edition production like on hand cut marble and like beautiful, weighs like 20 pounds, you know, just for the pieces alone, you're going to pick a better option, you know, and that really pertains to it. I mean, sure, games can be played with like cardboard cutout pieces called chits. It can be done that way, but is that going to be the same experience as having a big chunky mini? No, it's not. Let's be honest. But the big thing is art is of course, debatable. We do have artists that we feel is better, Tool, Chris Williams, Vincent Dutrait, all of those artists that we feel Beth Sobel, all of those artists that we feel use
Andrew Bosley.
Andrew Bosley, yep. But then also, can that graphic design help enhance the gameplay experience? If your thing is
Or does it
littered
hinder it?
with icons, yeah. If it's littered with icons versus a wall of text, which one are you going to be playing? Are the icons on simple, or do you have like 1.5 million icons you have to somehow learn all the rules to? Or, and this is a big thing with Daniel and I, very specifically, is it colorblind friendly? Because if it's not, that's a big down for me.
It's a big down.
Yeah.
You got to understand, there's a huge percentage of the population that are have some form of colorblindness. And game designers need to start really realizing that. But Stonemaier is one that's leading the cause where they're using different app integrations to help their with the colorblindness to make it easier. And you even have to admit, you could see a lot of their game colors. And
Yeah.
it's because of that app. It's not that hard. You use apps to help you. I don't know why game designers aren't doing this.
Yeah, exactly. Like I'll tell you something kind of funny if you don't mind. I'm going to go on a little tangent. I recently this last week I got to talk with one of the developers and a designer now for Level 99 Games. He's a friend of ours, a friend of the channels, Josh Van Lanningham, and we had a discussion about color blindness in games because he remembered I was colorblind. And he had me look at some of the original versions of one of the older games just to see how well I can see the colors. And he pointed out, I found a game that was at the shop that we were at that actually said colorblind friendly. And then I brought it, it's like, hey, this says it's colorblind friendly. It must be. And he was like, really, every game should be. Like, you shouldn't have to advertise that.
So,
That's all right.
going back onto our criteria, this way we can get this done quickly, is meaningful choice. That is impacting on other player strategies, impacting on your long-term strategies, as well as do arbitrary choices impact the gameplay?
That's right. And our final criteria is a simple one. We bounce around depending on the category, but it's game immersion. And specifically, since this one isn't based off of the mechanism that we're picking, do the theme match the mechanisms that are in the game? Does the game lead to outside table talk? Not involving just talk about strategy, but specifically like, do you role play the characters? Do you talk about like real world situations when playing the games? Like, it is does it lead to that outside interaction? And then memorable moments, which game gives you that pow stand up moment, everybody's cheering?
No,
That's
I this is actually my favorite category, but it's also one of the more subjective categories out there. And
absolutely.
then finally, the last thing, it's not really a criteria, but if for some reason that we end up tied, there's a tie somewhere among all this criteria between two games, that's when we go to the fan vote. Whoever is higher on that poll wins.
That's right. So we're going to start off with our very first round. That is Pandemic, our number one seed, versus our number eight seed, Terraforming Mars. As always, Daniel has the Cup of Doom where he shakes up the two options. I flip the Coin of Doom, and we combine our Doom powers to see who's debating first. Daniel, you're going first.
And I'm getting Terraforming Mars.
You would. All
I
right, make
do.
your case.
All right. So this one's tough for me. I like Pandemic a lot. It's a good game. I played it the mess out of it when I first got it. I haven't touched it since I beat Pandemic Legacy Volume 1 or Season 1. Since. So there's a bit of an issue on that. However, it's a good game, but Terraforming Mars is easily one of the most engrossing games on this list. You really get invested with what you're doing. That could be a con when it comes to like the table talk, because a lot of times you're looking down at your cards. You're like, "Ooh, I want to play this. Do I have the resources? Did I make sure these went up for I can do this?" There are so many choices in this game as well, whether you're going to play cards or you're going to use your money to put out plants or resources, for that matter, as you're expanding the board. As we're talking about replay value as well, it has 5 total expansions. New player board or new boards, the prelude, which adds more beginning to the game. You're also terraforming or working with Venix. There's quite a few. There's 5 total expansions. Not to mention a 6th one per se. It's more of a big box, but they're also giving you some tiles and stuff like that to make the game prettier, because God knows you need to make this game prettier, because it's not the best looking game on this list. Yeah. But there's so many choices on this game that affect not just your decisions, but someone else's. Case in point, I'll bring it up. Brute Force. You and me, when we played this game against some of our mutual friends, one of them who has a tendency to have AP, we forced him to not min-max the game by brute forcing it, trying to hit those in-game triggers. It is a bit on the longer side. Even with us, it was about a 3-hour game with you and me brute forcing it. But there's a lot going on in this game. There's a lot of good choices. There's replay value, what we talk about. So that's Terraforming Mars in a nutshell. Do I think it moves on? Unfortunately, I don't.
Yeah, and I agree with you on the fact that I don't think it'll move on, because I get why it's so much more of a favorite to other people, right? A lot of the people who love Terraforming Mars really like Terraforming Mars. That learning curve is steep, for one. That's the biggest counter argument to it, is because you and I are, you know, we're heavier gamers, you know, heavy, but like we play heavier games, and even then, this was kind of a slog to get going at first.
Oh yeah, it's one of those games where you literally have to play it to learn it, because no matter how many someone tells you, okay, you can do this, you can do this, you can do this, it's something you have to be like, okay, what do these cards do? Because I don't know what's in your hand if I'm teaching you the game. You have to go by what the cards say in your hand, in all honesty. Right. Now, the artwork is nice, and the fact that there's different artwork for every single card, and there's a lot of cards in this game. But honestly, based on our criteria, I don't even think it wins. It wins one.
Yeah.
And barely.
I think it would win one, but I mean, here's the thing. I remember multiple times in Terraforming Mars where I would look at my hand of cards and I would make arbitrary choices. That was the biggest thing. Like, I know there's a lot to do, but when everything is awesome, nothing is awesome. That's the truth of the matter. You know, it really is. Yeah. Like, when you have a hand of, like, I could do all of these options, but I can only play one of them and all of them are huge. I don't know which one I'm going to play for. I guess I'll just do this one, you know, and then.
Well, and not just that. The cost issue too. Sometimes you'll get a hand where all of them are like, you have to have 30 of something to pay for them. And it can slow your engine down while everybody else is brute forcing the game by making this go up or that go up or putting oceans out there or cities out there. It's just like, well, I want to do something, but the cards aren't letting me.
Yeah, exactly. And you're beholden. This is one of the biggest examples of you are so beholden to the cards themselves, because some cards cost as few as like 1 or 2 coins or whatever, 1 or 2, and some are like 30 plus, you know. That's massive.
Or a big thing too with the cards is you'll get the cards in your hand and they'd be like, oh, these are pretty cheap, but then I have to wait till the oxygen's at level 8 or 14 before I can even do anything. And that's like in-game cards.
So a lot of good they do right now, right?
You know, I have now the expansion Prelude does fix a lot of that. It lets you have a lot of better starting resources and stuff like that. But still, base game, that's a lot to slog through.
It hurts it. I completely agree. I think Pandemic should move on. I will make my counter arguments for Pandemic on a later round, because I don't think there's
a content. So, I mean, honestly, I see Ease of Play going to Pandemic. Art Introduction, I have to say, is better in Pandemic. Mm-hmm. Meaningful choice, again, arbitrary choices affect Terraforming Mars. I see that going to Pandemic. Yep. And Game Immersion, I see going to Pandemic. The only one I see is Replay Value, and that's just because there's just more expansions to Terraforming Mars.
Yep. And it plays a wider range, and there is, you're right, you have to learn how to play the game by playing the game multiple times. So there's that. I agree. Cool. So Pandemic moves on. Congratulations, Pandemic. Our next round is a very straightforward one. Carcassonne versus Codename. Battle of the Seas.
Aren't these both Spiel winners, too?
They are both Spiel winners, yes. And that will be our first round, will be you starting again. See, the coin is not broken.
All right. Oh, let's see which one I get. Can you guess which one I like out of these two?
Yes, Codenames.
No, Carcassonne.
Really? Oh, you
But I get Codenames. I'm okay with Carcassonne. I just won't play with you.
Yeah. As long as I'm not playing, you're fine.
So I get Codenames. And so why do I always get the lower seed? Come on. Now, don't get me wrong. There's a lot going for Codenames. You want to pick a theme? Pick a theme. They got everything from Harry Potter to Disney to Marvel to Simpsons. It's really one of the simplest games to teach on this list and to learn, because you're basically giving a one-word clue, one number and one-word clue based on the cards that are in front of you to your teammate or mates, for that matter. It scales pretty well-ish for a party game. I can see why people say you can play in groups, but sometimes that bogs the game down. It does have a phenomenal amount of memorable moments. I remember playing this and having a good time with it to an extent, but to me, there's just much better party games out there. The assassin issue is fun, especially if you're like, okay, I'm going to guess this, and your partner's just like, oh, because you picked the assassin. It's good stuff. I do enjoy it. Here's my one major issue with Codenames. The base regular Codenames is just lettering. There's really no art except for maybe the people that you cover and your colors and stuff like that. So it's not going to win a lot of categories. Even if we do like replay value expansions, they're not really expansions. They're just re-theming. So it doesn't really match the mechanism for game immersion either. So because it's a painted on theme. It's not a bad game.
Yeah.
I have a good time playing it, but I think Carcassonne moves on.
Yeah, I once again, I agree with you. I do think Carcassonne moves on because it's technically more thematic. It's one of the lightest, pure, or like really strong strategy games, because it is a strategy game, but it doesn't make you hurt to figure out the strategy, because your tile tells you, hey, if you need to connect grass, you connect it to grass. You need to connect roads, you connect it to roads. Cities, yeah. Cities. That's it. Now, what you do with those and how you build it is your strategy. And so it's as brilliant as Go in a way, because Go tells you, oh, you can just put a piece anywhere. Like, it doesn't matter where you put it. But then what you're allowed to do with those pieces and how they work together, that's where it's brilliant. I just compared Carcassonne to Go. But compared to Codenames, I think Codenames is also a brilliant game. It really does restrict you. And I love the way it's restricting. My biggest argument with Codenames is the amount of downtime for each player. I love being the clue giver and I love being the guesser both. I hate the amount of time where somebody is just sitting there going,
Yeah.
As they're racking their brain trying to come up with a really great, phenomenal clue. Which it's to maximize the most one, and then
you want to hear my argument against Codenames?
Huh.
The repos made a game that does pretty much everything that Codenames does, but better. And that one is Just One. It does. You give one word clues. It's a one word answer. It's co-op. I just think Just One really, if we're talking about games that killed another game, Just One really killed Codenames for me.
Yep, it absolutely did. It did. And I like them both, but yeah, Codenames I probably like just slightly better than Just One, but maybe. It depends on the day. It might actually flip for me.
Honestly, I again, because of last year, Just One just made it so much easier to still play games, and it's so simple. I want that expansion so bad to come to America just because I want it. I need more Just One.
Yeah, you need Just More.
Just More, yeah.
So with that being said, Carcassonne moves on.
I agree.
All right. Moving
on to our next one, our number 3 seed, Catan, going up against our number 6 seed, Ticket to Ride. This is the tough one for me. Well, not so much. I like one game more than the other, but I can't fault fault Catan either.
Nope. Exactly. And these are also both Spiel winners. So you will not be debating first. Not you.
All right, let's see what you end up getting. You get Ticket to Ride.
Ticket to Ride. She's got a ticket. I won't sing any more than that because I don't think we have the rights to do so. Ticket to Ride is awesome. It's effectively Gin Rummy on a board. I mean,
it really is.
There's not much more to it than that. I mean, there's like... I've always loved hearing the arguments, and this is I'm gonna reference Tom Vassell of the Dice Tower, because he always brings this up too in any of the debates. If he said there are people who argue that Ticket to Ride is too random, and it's all by chance, and anybody who says that, we will beat you every time. I guarantee it. You think it's too random? I will win. I promise you, because I can out-strategize you. Now, when I play it pretty calmly. You know, we play it where we don't aim to block other people per se. So I mainly play two-player games, so like blocking you doesn't help me. It just makes it worse for you.
Yeah, the only time you're blocking the other player is just because that's a route you need to finish your ticket.
Yeah. Now I have blocked other players too, and I have done that, but more often than not we don't really care to do it. We're just trying to complete our routes, and we see it more of a fun challenge to try and like break our record of how many tickets we're completing. Instead of like, oh, well, now I just made your life miserable because I took, you know, New York to Boston, you know, all of a sudden. Now you have to go through Quebec for no reason. It makes sense, but at the same time, you know, it's not necessary to have fun in the game. It's simpler to play. There's only like three things you could do on your turn. The art is actually pretty darn decent on it. And like,
I do have to say this.
The art is good. Yeah.
I do have to say this. I put this as a con for it. It does allow for some table talk, but I'm unsure if it's the kind that you want. I've seen couples go at each other playing this game.
Right. But honestly, like when you roll a 7 in Catan, though, it's the same thing. It's,
yeah.
Like if we're talking that, I mean, it's better art. It's easier to play, for one. But I also think it has more meaningful choices because while the choices are fewer in between, you're not beholden to a dice roll. You are beholden to which cards come up, but there are ways to mitigate that. There are ways to get, you know, you could go for the fewer options and get the wild cards, or you can go for alternate routes, or you can try and save up the sets the way you want to, or you can go for more tickets to just kind of pass your time if you've already completed a lot of your routes or give you more options. There's way more strategy in this than I think Catan even has. And with that alone, I feel wins it.
So I do have some issues with Ticket to Ride, but I do have to give them this one prop. This is probably the oldest game on this list that I remembered actively made it colorblind friendly. So yeah, sometimes the colors, you can't really see it. They added symbols. It's a simple change like that, making it where people can see, even if it's a color they can't see, the symbol helps you match routes and cards. That to me, just a simple step that you can do.
Yeah.
I don't disagree with you. I think Ticket to Ride does move on because art and production alone, it wins. I think it is easier because if you know how to play Rummy, you can play Rummy. But I do have to say this about Catan. If it wasn't for Catan and as popular as it was back in the day, I don't think we see Ticket to Ride here in America. Catan is the granddaddy of most Euro-style games. Is it the best Catan? No, but I do have to say this. It's the only game that I know that the expansions have expansions.
Yeah, it's very rare to have expansions upon expansions.
So, ease of play, I think Ticket to Ride. Art production, Ticket to Ride. Meaningful choice, I think there's a lot more meaningful choice in Ticket to Ride. Only for the simple fact that Catan, there's dice rolling, and that's a big issue because a lot of randomness. If you're not getting the resources because your numbers are just not getting rolled, even though you got an 8, and you're assuming that's going to get rolled more because statistically it should, and it's not happening, you're beholden to that. Another thing that going for Catan, though, is memorable moments. It makes it where it has to have memorable moments. It's a meme, sheep for wood, because of this. So yep. I think it gets memorable moments in replay value, but game immersion replay value, but that's really
Yeah.
The only two I see, Catan. I see Ticket to Ride, Moving On, and I agree with you for everything you said. I just want to give Catan its due.
Absolutely. All right, so Ticket to Ride moves on, beating out Catan. Who knew? All right, and our last one, our number 4 seed, Seven Wonders, versus our number 5 seed, Dominion. And Daniel, you'll be starting us this round.
All right, let me just move some stuff around here. Shake up the cup of doom.
A Kenner spiel versus a spiel winner.
All right. Of course I get this one.
Seven Wonders. Dominion. All right, go ahead.
Honestly, this is my least favorite bracket. Not gonna try to take my bias out of it. But I do prefer Dominion over Seven Wonders. I mentioned it at the top. I think Seven Wonders Duel is a much better game than Seven Wonders.
Yep.
For me, Dominion, I talked about how Catan is basically the granddaddy of Euro games, and a lot of the ones that we're playing now wouldn't be here if Catan wasn't successful. I can say the same about deck builders when it comes to Dominion. Dominion put a lot of this stuff on the map. And yep. When we're talking about some of the criteria we have here, Dominion wins replay value alone. It plays pretty well and scales pretty well. And then just with the expansions, there's what, 11?
There is, I think, 13 now.
13, yeah. To the point where if you're one of those people that like to put everything in one box, you have to do two boxes for all the expansions.
Yeah, you do.
And you have, like, what, one of those big art boxes for, like, from that sell at craft stores, and you still can't fit everything into it. That says something. How many expansions on it? Another good thing about that too is that it's a really easy game to teach. It's really easy to learn because you're basically just having to figure out how the cards work. But it's a difficult game to master, and sometimes it's a sign of a really good game. They mentioned it earlier for Pandemic. Dominion's the same way. You can play it, you can learn it, you can have fun with it. But it's not simple enough to master, unless you're playing against your wife, who just dominates everybody. Scales pretty well, but the one major con for Dominion and a lot of these games, it is a dry, mechanistic Euro. The theme is there, but it doesn't need to be there, in all honesty. But yeah. Because and just out of the base box, the variability to start it, it's phenomenal. Out of this one, I think Dominion moves on, but barely, honestly. I think Seven Wonders is prettier. And I think Seven Wonders is easier to learn. Easier to learn.
I strongly disagree, because I think Dominion is easier to learn, because it's the idea of just spending money, but you're discarding cards and then drawing cards from a deck.
Yeah, any
poker player knows how to do that. The reason why I think Seven Wonders, well, I'll go and argue for it. You're right. Art and production, Seven Wonders, yes. 100%. It does have some meaningful choices. But here's the problem. If you play against somebody who can memorize the hands when it comes to them, they're gonna trounce everybody. And it's not because they're better at strategy, they're just better at memory. And they know they can then hate draft, and then make themselves a winning strategy, but prevent everybody else from winning.
From having a win.
And you're winning by default. And a lot of times, because there's so many restrictions in Seven Wonders, like, I can build this if I have this one for free. Okay, that's cool. But then I need these resources to do it. And if I don't have these resources, well, I guess I can pay you money. Well, I don't have enough money, so I have to discard a card. But then that doesn't help me, because then this isn't going to come back to me probably. Until like 3-4 turns, if it even does, you know, that it took what should have been an incredibly simple mechanism of drafting and made it obscenely complicated in comparison.
Oh, don't even get me started on when you're playing the card, and if you don't have the resources, but you can pay your neighbor to do it too. That is one of the hardest things for me to remember when I play this game. And I'm glad they basically took that out. And another thing with the replay value, when we're talking about it, about the scaling well part of it, the fact that they had to make a completely separate game to play two players, because there were so many flaws in the two player. It shouldn't have been two players at all for Seven Wonders.
And now it's 3-7 because of that.
Yeah. And I think there's only two expansions for Seven Wonders, maybe three.
No, there's quite a few now. There's like four or five at least.
Not like 13.
Yeah, not 13 though. Let's be real. They didn't have to have another whole base set. They made a reinforce. They didn't make a new base set. They had a second edition, which Dominion also did.
So I think we're in agreement that Dominion moves on.
Dominion moves on.
And oh, you're loving this debate, aren't you?
No, this is gonna suck now.
No, but I'm just saying, with all these games that moved on, this is your gaming life right here.
Yeah. Yeah, these were like my top four games, almost of all time. I haven't, although here's the sad part, you know, it's been so long since I've played the base of any of these games. Probably the most recently I might have played Carcassonne more recently than all the others, but just barely, maybe. I don't know.
I know we played Carcassonne digitally, but it's been a while, so.
Yeah. Yeah, I have played Carcassonne most recently because I played the Hunters and Gatherers, the newest version.
That's true. Hold on. I just got to make some notes here. And before we move on to the semifinals, I will explain everything that happened. I just got to make sure I keep it up. All right, here we go. So the four games that have been eliminated, our lowest ranked game was Codenames with 8 votes. It tied for none of the above, which is sad because I think it deserved a little bit more love. Our number 7 voted game, also eliminated, was Catan. It only had 10 votes.
Yep.
Moving on up, the next one that was eliminated was Seven Wonders. It was our 4th vote getter at 26. It's shocking. Our number 1 vote getter, by a significant margin, Terraforming Mars was eliminated. It had a 50 vote difference between because it was number 1 between our number 2, which we'll get to a little bit later.
Which I feel kind of bad about, because now everybody who voted for that just shut off the channel. We have no viewers in the chat now. You know, it's just that everyone deleted their podcast from their phone. You know, they're like, nope, these guys are out. Unsubscribe. No, please don't do that.
Please don't do that.
We have our reasons. We have our reasons.
We have criteria. So that's why we're going through this.
Yep. If you like Terraforming Mars better, that makes sense. I get you.
I like Terraforming Mars. That's my favorite game on this list. But I even said Pandemic moves on just based off our criteria.
That's right. That's right. Great. All right. On to our next round. We have Pandemic versus Ticket to Ride, our semifinals.
And Daniel, the semifinal is going to suck.
This is going to be hard.
All right. Who gets this one?
I do.
Ticket to Ride again.
Ticket to Ride. Okay. So this is when we start going through each of the categories really in detail. If I had to assume just immediately, I would say, oh God, this would be tough. This would be
really There's two tough. That jump out at me, and I'll argue it when I have to, but for sure, Art and Production goes Ticket to Ride.
Yes, I agree. And that's even including the second edition. And it's not much better. You know, it's just cubes, the train cards are just better. I mean, it's could have been done with little wooden sticks, you know, and we've seen Euro games use those before.
Yeah, my big thing with Pandemic is it's the one that always attracts me is the pawns.
Yeah, yeah. I'll put it this way. This was something hilarious that I noticed. I recently got a game that I won't name why or what it is right now, but they did advertise that they have little train cars for their pieces, and they happen to have enough of them to be used in most other train-based games, hint, hint, but they never said which games it was. And so I technically have more sets of other train cars that are coming for my Ticket to Ride. So just think about that, you know, like that's something that this is universally known for. If you have custom train cars, you could buy like amazing versions of it. Oh my goodness, it's awesome. Anyway, Ticket to Ride, though, immediately what jumps out at me is I feel it's easier to play because it really is simple. Pandemic isn't a very simple game, but it has the phases that you have to deal with. This is literally you choose draw some cards or play cards. And it's not like
you put some trains, little trains down.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And all you're doing is set collecting. It is like Gin Rummy where you're playing cards in that
aspect. Honestly, the longest part of this game is putting your little trains in the position. That's really it.
Right, exactly. It doesn't like make sure they line up correctly. My wife just likes to throw them on there knowing that I will fix them because they stress me out if I don't. And she messes with me every time. And that's probably why she wins. Because I'm more focused on fixing the trains and making sure they line up. But Ticket to Ride, I feel like those do have that. Now, strategy, I do think that there is quite a bit of strategy in Ticket to Ride. I wouldn't go as far as to say that there's more than more meaningful choices in Ticket to Ride than there are in Pandemic. You can drastically affect other players, but I don't think to the degree of it. You are as beholden to the deck of train cards as you are in Pandemic, of which cards come up as the player cards. Both, that's also a collection game. I would probably still give that to Pandemic, though. Play value. You can play Ticket to Ride immediately. Again, it does have a number of versions. They have US and Europe and the Netherlands and Marklin.
If we're not even counting like Europe or like the standalone expansions, just the map packs alone give you something different.
Right, exactly. But I mean, Pandemic has fewer expansions but more spin-offs. So maybe that's something we need to keep in mind, is because
here's the thing. The reason why we don't argue this is because the spin-offs are their own game. That's why I'm just talking about the expansions for, because if you look at Ticket to Ride, you got 1910, you have the map packs for like the Nordic and stuff like that. You have the India, the Africa, I think it's what one of them is. Those are just map packs, not to mention like the Alvin and Dexter and the little cheeky fun expansions that they have going on too. So I think Pandemic only has two expansions.
Three official expansions.
I couldn't think of, I knew like Hot Lab, the lab where it adds like the sixth or the fourth, fifth player who's like a hidden role kind of player who's trying to.
Yep. In the lab, that kind on of the stuff. Brink, and then the one that introduces the animals.
Okay.
So
also, when we're talking about length of time and scaling well, I think replay value goes to Ticket to Ride because it holds more players and it's not that much longer if you're going from a 2 to 5 player game.
I agree, replay value goes to Ticket to Ride. Then game immersion, I feel, goes with, especially now Pandemic.
Well, when it comes down to a Pandemic itself, when we're kind of like talking about theme matching the mechanism, it's another one of those mechanistic driven games. It's honestly, the theme's there, but they've proven the mechanism is the game, because you have Cthulhu that plays just like Pandemic. You have the Fall of Rome that plays pretty much the same way too. Right. So mechanistically,
The way that it has the outbreaks and different spots around the world based on like their location, how well they're interconnected with the other cities, I feel is more thematic than you going, hey, that route between Santa Fe and El Paso looks pretty cool. I want trains.
Oh, see, the thing is,
that's not how the trains were ever built.
No, but in a way, if you think about it, it is fitting in a sense, because you're each basically your own railroad company. You're trying to interconnect. So you are literally, back in the 1800s and stuff like that, you're literally fighting each other. I know there was an argument for me because they have Las Vegas on the map. Where I'm like, if this is supposed to be like in the 1900s, Las Vegas shouldn't be here. It should be Carson City. That was the bigger city that everybody was trying to put the trains in. So there's that disconnect as well.
Sure. Yeah. So I wonder, because Ticket to Ride is all about networking cities together and creating those paths, where Pandemic in a weird way is restricting the path. Like, it, right? In a way, right? They're both abstract.
Yeah.
It is creating paths in a train theme more thematic than restricting paths in a disease based themed. I would call that a wash.
Now that we're talking about it, I'd have to call that a wash too. Now, here's the interesting part about game immersion. This is where we may have issues. I think Pandemic wins player interaction. There's a lot more talking. There's a lot more interaction with each other. But memorable moments, which one do you think wins?
Pandemic.
Because I think it's Ticket to Ride.
you either do or don't win. When the epidemic cards show up, that is a game changing. Everybody goes, ah, this is the worst time. There is so many opportunities.
I get that. But for me, like Ticket to Ride, and just for like memorable moments, I think I've had more in Ticket to Ride, because I'll be sitting there and I'll be playing with like you and our mutual friend Bryce, my wife, and like just a group of people. And then me and Bryce are like trying to go on the southern route, trying to get, because I have to go from like Los Angeles to Miami. So I'm trying to go that way. And nobody's paying attention to what my wife's doing. And she's going from like Los Angeles all the way up through Canada and all the way down through Miami. And then about halfway through, we're like, guys, do you see her route over here? And then there's a lot of talking. And my wife's like, don't worry about it. Stay over there. Go leave me alone. I have more memorable moments, just me personally. But I agree with you, pandemic wins memorable moments.
Yeah, I feel, just my argument for a pandemic is because when something drastic happens, it affects every player. Whereas like if in that moment that you're talking about, like if you were to put down a train path that blocks my path, that affects me and not the other players necessarily. Mm-hmm. You know, it's sure it's memorable. I'm like, but when was it like, there's not too many memorable moments that I have to ride that don't happen every game.
I'll tell you my favorite memorable moment in pandemic, though.
Go ahead.
When our mutual friend Bryce was teaching the game to some new gamers, and he decided not to make it easy for them, or he forgot to. I'm like, Bryce, you were supposed to take out like two of those cards, because they just kept getting the bad cards after another. Kind of like what you did to us in Forbidden Desert. Forbidden Island pandemic.
That's awful. Wow. That's brutal.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I think that's way more memorable, especially when you draw. It actually happened to us during a pandemic legacy, and this isn't a spoiler, but there is a small chance, it's very unlikely, where you'll draw two epidemics on the same turn, right? Because you separate them by the piles and you shuffle up each pile. It happened. It officially happened. My wife drew two epidemics on the same turn, and we just, wow, that's the worst. I think pandemic wins it overall.
I unfortunately have to agree with you. I prefer Ticket to Ride. And I think the reason why I played the mess out of pandemic and I really enjoyed it, I love co-op games, is Legacy really ruined pandemic for me.
Yeah. Yeah. There was a long period of time where after you played Pandemic Legacy, you didn't play the base.
And let's just put it this way. After I finished Pandemic Legacy, I still haven't played a game of pandemic.
Yeah.
And I have volume 2 sitting on my shelf.
Mm-hmm. And soon to be volume 0.
Zero. If I can catch that on a deal. I got all of my legacies on a deal.
Oh, Mr. Bragging over here. No, I don't blame you. I had to buy it the day of. All three pandemics I bought the day that they were released. Or pretty close.
All right, let's do our last semifinal here. And this is, I think, I don't know. I think the other one was a little bit harder for you, but this is a close second.
This tears at me. All right, this is Carcassonne versus Dominion. Daniel, you'll be leading our argument today.
What do I get? I get Carcassonne.
Okay. I'll take my bias out of it. That's
For me, Carcassonne, I think, actually does go on to face pandemic. I think one major reason, when we're talking production value, Carcassonne is through the roof, to the point they invented something that most games are still using to this day. We even have a term for it that people talk about, and that's meeples.
Yep.
This is something that not just revolutionized gaming itself, this revolutionized gaming. The meeple is something that is still used in a lot of Euro games. And in fact, when there's not meeples, people are like, where are the meeples? What's going on? This is a Euro game. Where's my meeples? Why do I have pawns? Kind of pandemic. Why am I having pawns in pandemic? There's meeples. And so just for production value alone. And the tiles are really nice. The only issue I have with Carcassonne at times when it comes to like ease of play is the scoring. That's it. The like when you're trying to figure out how to score farmers and stuff like that, or how to score your I guess you could say your monk in the abbey who's got to figure out how to get everything around. Other than that, the scoring is not that hard. You get your tile, you find out where you got to place it. You got to worry about other people trying to get into your castles. You know, the jerks. Another thing, Carcassonne actually scales very well too. It's still a quick game for as many people as it can hold, because I think it's what, 4, 5, 6, something like that, depending on the expansions. Yeah, five player Euro game, that's very rare, honestly, especially for its time. It's well produced, it scales very well. I think it's almost up there with Dominion when it comes to expansions. So I think Dominion edges it out, but I think what, Carcassonne has 9 expansions, official expansions.
Okay, so let's talk for a minute, because I do know these numbers. I believe there is either 9 or 10 official expansions that are big box expansions. Okay, and I mean big box by like $20 price point or more. They also made 6 mini expansions, which were expansions. The 6, there was like the river, or not the river, I'm sorry. There was the, not Corin Circles. There was the fairies. There was the, like the lakes. There was the gold bars. There's all these different mini expansions. And then they would also have mini expansions of like 12 tiles that were included in like magazines and stuff, which all, even if considered that as promos, Carcassonne does outrank number of expansions just barely.
Okay, so it runs replay value there because like I said, the scaling, well, the replay value, time commitment.
You said on all three categories.
I really think, as simple as Dominion is, the fact that you have to learn all the different cards, yeah, you get to read them, but you have to learn all the different cards. Carcassonne, at its simple, even though there's a bunch of other stuff, is you get a tile, you figure out where you got to place that tile, and you can choose. Are you going to place your meeple down, or you're just going to wait and see what happens on your next turn? That's very simple. Do I put them on the road? Do I put them on the grass? Do I put them in the building? That's really it. It's very simple. I think it wins ease of play as well. And honestly, I think just there's a lot more meaningful choices in Carcassonne. So I give it 3-2, 4-2, 4-1 actually, because I think it wins art and production too.
I agree with art and production. I do agree with ease of play. I do agree with replay value. I do agree with, meaningful choices, because Dominion, it is beholden to what you draw, and that is a much larger factor. But I also give it immersion.
Honestly, I didn't want to make it 5-0, but I agree. I give it immersion
too. It's a landslide. It's a landslide. And I love Dominion. I really do. But it's a landslide. Absolutely. Carcassonne gets it.
Oh, this is interesting. Our number one versus our number two.
Mm-hmm. Carcassonne moves on. So between the two, they have more than 150,000 votes.
let's see here.
Carcassonne won the Spiel des Jahres in 2001, one of the most well-known modern board games around, although Pandemic definitely gives it a run for its money, especially nowadays.
Yeah, so here's an interesting note here. Dominion was our 6th vote-getter at 15, and Ticket to Ride was actually our 3rd vote-getter at 30, so those two got eliminated, which means our number 2 vote getter is still in it, and our number 5 vote getter is still in it. And there is a 8-point difference between the two. So it was quite close.
Yep. All right. Let's find out. I honestly don't know which way this is gonna go. There's a lot of choices. I think that they're gonna tie on a lot of categories. But
I agree.
Pandemic versus Carcassonne for our finale of the best, most voted on games on Board Game Geek.
And so this is interesting, because when we get down to the finals, we take everything out of it. We don't even choose a side. We just break down the 5 criteria. Who comes out on top wins it all. So, and these are some of your favorite games. So how do you feel about this? I know your number one game is on the list here, but...
Yep. Full disclosure, Carcassonne is my favorite game of all time. Pandemic Legacy Season 1, honestly, was just shy of taking that off of my favorite game of all time. So I've loved the Pandemic system. I think it's brilliant.
To the point that they pretty much use the Pandemic system in Horrified, and it's still a great game.
Yes, and I've seen a lot of... I just picked up a game from a small designer up in northern New Mexico this week, and it was in a little tube, and it uses a very similar... It's a cooperative game that uses action points and stuff, which is very similar to Pandemic, you know? You're just trying to get... It's a pick-up-and-deliver Pandemic, basically.
So Horrified.
Yeah. But way simpler.
Well, Horrified basically is a pick up and deliver, because you pick up pieces and take it to where you need to.
That's right. Yeah, it's very similar to that. This is hard.
All right. Anything jumping out to you?
Yes, replay value. Carcassonne. Yep. The only modules in Pandemic really are just how many epidemics you do for difficulty.
Yeah, that's really the only variability.
There's almost as many Carcassonne variants as there are Pandemic variants, but expansions alone just dwarf it.
Yeah, no, I agree with you completely. Aren't in production?
That's tough. I agree with you. Components goes to Carcassonne because of the meeple.
Now here's the thing: I think Pandemic wins is the graphic design, the way that board works, as you mentioned before.
Yeah.
With the cards, you know which ones are the bad cards, which ones are the good cards, which ones are the city cards. It's very simple to figure out. The way things are moving up that you can keep track of. I think graphic design goes to Pandemic. Now, which has the better art?
That's tough. Probably Pandemic.
I agree. Barely. Because the tiles are really nice. The expansions are really nice.
In Carcassonne, here's the thing, though. Carcassonne has, like, all the little Easter eggs, the little, there's, like, random little sheep, like, the buildings are slightly different. There's a lot of nuances to it. But that's because the second edition added a lot of those. Now, granted, mm-hmm. same with Pandemic, too. Pandemic's second edition added a lot of those in. And the art, there's not much art in Pandemic, though. The cover is phenomenal. I like the cover a lot. The graphic design is really good.
Your player characters have some nice art and stuff like that, too.
Yeah, it's just a map on the board or on the cards. Mm-hmm. That's it. It tells you the population. That's really it. Like, there's not much art. It's good art. And I really like the intense, it's almost like a neon futuristic like style motif mm-hmm. to it. But it makes sense that Carcassonne is medieval.
But I also think like, even though it's minimalistic art, you also have the nice art on the, what are they called? The viruses itself, when you're keeping them track on the board, they got this nice screen print on them. You got the nice screen print on the tracker about if that skull tracker, epidemic tracker, telling you how many cards you got to pull. So I just think, like I said, slightly Pandemic wins, but it's a close one.
Although, you know, I'm going to backtrack a little bit. The graphic design in Carcassonne is integral to the game. You very well know where the roads start and stop. You know which parts are town. You know which parts are farms. It is all very clear where once you build the map and you sit back and you have to score it all, you look at it and it's all very clear to see where everything is.
The farms are a little tricky.
Well, but I mean...
Because it's like, okay, this is connected. Oh, wait, there's another meeple over there. Never mind. I'm not scoring.
That doesn't... Like, you figure it out a little bit, right? But... Mm-hmm. You have to have that graphic design in order for the game to function properly. And it does.
Well, you could say the same about Pandemic. You got to know what cities you can connect to. Yeah, you have the pilot ability where you can jump cities, but you got to know, like, if I'm going to do a quick travel, these are connected, these are not. You can't go from here to here because it makes sense in the world.
Yeah, it does.
But if you want to, we can call this a wash as well.
Yeah, I have arguments for both, and I'm willing to call it a wash because of that.
And so, 1-to-1 wash, complete wash.
Okay.
All right, so the other two, I think, are going to be a little bit harder when we get to the argument. So let's just go, which game is easier?
Park is just as quick as it is. Park is easier because your turn consists of place a tile. You don't have choices of actions. You don't.
It's
difficult.
It's really and your difficult. Only other choice in Park is: do I put my meeple here or do I wait and save what I have? No, I agree with you. It's real simple. I think Park wins more.
Which one is more AP prone, in your opinion? Do you think Pandemic because of the state of the board every turn?
I do think Pandemic is slightly more AP prone just because you have to think about everything you're doing. Okay, we need to send the medic over here. So there's a lot of thinking before someone actually takes his turn because you're talking it out at the table. Don't get me wrong. There's nothing wrong with that. But with Kark, you're basically, I can place this tile here or here. These are the two areas I really can place this based on what the symbols I have. Now, my other choice is, do I put my meeple on here to be a robber or do I wait? Right. Because I don't know if this road is going to finish anytime soon. So I think...
AP prone can affect the alpha gamer too, the one who's telling everybody what they should and shouldn't do on their turn. That's huge as well on Pandemic. And so
I just think Kark is much simpler and there's not a lot of AP comparatively to Pandemic. Because I've had games of Pandemic where someone's just like, oh my god, what am I gonna do? What should I do? And we talk about it and we explain and they're just like, I don't know about that. And it just that whole turn takes 10 minutes by itself just because they're unsure of how they're gonna do things.
Right. Okay. I agree with that. He's a play. Goes to Carcassonne.
All right. So I think immersion. For me, the game immersion itself, I think Pandemic wins that one.
Yes.
The theme wholeheartedly matches better. There's a lot more table talk because you have to work.
I agree with you with Pandemic, but the theme is there in Carcassonne because that is, in a weird way, that is kind of how they built Carcassonne. That was why they made it, that theme, right? Is
because I agree with you.
Walled themselves off.
But I just think even if we call that one a wash, I think there's more player interaction and talking out in Pandemic, as well as you mentioned at the top when we first started arguing Pandemic. I just think there's more memorable moments based on the card pools and, oh my god, if we don't finish this or we finally completely eradicate a disease, there's just a lot more memorable moments in that.
Okay, I agree. So 2.5. Wait, how many points does Pandemic have now?
1. If it wins meaningful choice, we go to tiebreaker.
Okay, that's fair. So let's talk about the meaningful choices. We got to break these down. What are the 3 criteria again for those?
Impacting on other player strategies, impacting on players' long-term strategies, and do arbitrary choices make an impact on the game? And honestly, unfortunately, I have to say Carcassonne wins this because though all that stuff is in Pandemic, the one where I think it loses is the arbitrary choices. You are beholden to the card draws, especially if an epidemic comes up, things get shuffled and put on. You don't have a choice on how that's mitigated unless you have a certain card in hand. And if you don't have that card in hand, it cannot be mitigated. And I'm talking about One Quiet Night. Whereas in Kark, you're impacting other player strategies. You're proof of that. You jump into other people's buildings, impacting your own long-term strategies. Do I put that meeple out now? And no, he's going to try to jump into the castle that I'm building over here, or he's going to try to jerry-rig it where I'm not going to get a lot of points in it.
So I would say impacting long-term strategy definitely is Pandemic, though.
I agree, but I'm just saying they both meet a lot of these criteria. I just think Carcassonne, the arbitrary choices is the main thing that hurts Pandemic a lot. It's just because if you don't have that one card, you're going to lose the game. And you don't have a choice in the matter. The cards are shuffled up. Epidemic comes up. Boom, boom, boom. Three different outbreaks. You lose.
Yeah, I feel like you could, that there could be situations where you are guaranteed to lose depending on how the cards lay. I don't disagree with you on that. So I would give it to Pandemic or Carcassonne for non-arbitrary. Long-term strategy is Pandemic. And I'm just trying to be fair about this. Impacting other strategies. Or I'm sorry, long-term strategy.
You gave long-term strategy to Pandemic. It's impact on your strategy.
Impacting your strategy. Now, that's tricky because Pandemic, technically, your strategy is everyone's strategy.
Everybody's strategy, yeah.
I think the only thing that I would, why I would give it to Carcassonne is the nod, and hear me if you agree with this, or tell me if you agree with this, is the fact that Carcassonne, there is no alpha gamer. And the fact is that if I can tell you how to best do your turn to convince you for the benefit of us, you're out of the game then. Like,
well, it's not just that. Like, we're talking about card, you have to make smart choices because you only have a finite amount of meeples to put on the board. If I'm stretching myself too thin, I'm not going to score the points I need. You have to be smart of how you're placing your meeples out there. And that's why I think Carcassonne right there wins impacting the long-term strategy for yourself, because you have to be careful how you put your meeples out there.
Yeah. And you have to also be careful in Pandemic of where you're moving everybody and how you're mitigating everything. But at the same time, being in the right place at the right time to get those endgame goals to cure the diseases. I'm trying to be as fair and taking my bias out of it.
I've taken completely bias. I just think Carcassonne wins, honestly.
Then
I just think the fact that you have a finite amount of meeples, have to be smart how you play things out. You can't just be willy-nilly with your resources. You can sometimes be willy-nilly with stuff that's going on in Pandemic. If you got, let's say, blue cards in your hands that you don't need because the disease is eradicated, it's just filling your hand. So you're just trying to shed those cards or move to a certain city to move yourself closer to something. But even then, you're beholden to a card draw.
Yeah.
You can't really long-term strategy based on card draws.
I wasn't convinced before, but you've convinced me that Carcassonne is a better game.
Shockingly enough, I prefer Pandemic or Carcassonne. I just think there's just more strategy to it.
Well, when playing with me, yes. Yeah.
No, I just won't play with you. I'll play with some other people.
Oh, that's true. How did they rank with our viewers?
So our number one and our number two vote getters were eliminated. That was, of course, Terraforming Mars at the top of the thing. Mm-hmm. And Pandemic was our number two at 33. So it was 50 points behind Terraforming Mars when it took it out. And Carcassonne was our fifth best vote getter and ends up winning the best, most voted on game.
That's kind of weird, isn't it? that's a little strange to argue. Well, congratulations to Carcassonne. There's a reason it's my favorite game of all time because, I mean, take bias out of it, it's a legitimately strong strategy game.
There's a lot of strategy to it. I'm not going to lie. I just won't play with you.
Okay. We'll have to play one of the variants. I think it would like the Hunters and Gatherers.
I heard that's actually one of the better ones. I do want to try that one or Amazon.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Any one of the different ones. Anyway, I digress. We want to thank you for tuning in. This has been a fun debate. Congratulations to Carcassonne and Klaus Jürgen Reed and Hutch Games, or I think that's how you say it. And Z-Man, who prints it now. Used to be Rio Grande Games. Oh man, it was a
trend. And hey, the 20th anniversary or 10th anniversary coming out this year, something like that.
Oh yeah, 2021. Yeah, I'm excited. And they advertise it with just like a little banner and like the shiny cover. I have no idea what that means. Maybe it'll be like amazing meeple. I don't know. I have no idea. But congratulations, Carcassonne. If you want to join us on one of our live episodes, you definitely can join us at twitch.tv/everydayboardgames.
As well as you can find all video re-uploads on YouTube at Everyday Board Games 2020. If you like what you find, please give us a like and a subscribe. It helps us grow immensely on the platform. As well as leave a comment down there. Which one do you think is the better one of these games? As well as all audio versions are found on most podcast platforms under Everyday Board Games Podcast, including Spotify, Google, Amazon Music, and Podbean.
And if you ever want to email us with ideas for future episodes or just want to say hi to either Daniel or Daniel, you can email us at everydayboardgames2020@gmail.com.
As well as you can also get in contact with us on the official Twitter account of Everyday Board Games, and that is at EBG Podcast.
So we want to thank you for tuning in and thank you for listening to our podcast. As always, I've been Daniel.
And I've been Daniel.
And we want to thank you for listening to Everyday Board Games.
Have a good one.